You're listening to the Nuff Said podcast, real strategies for customer success.
Hey everyone, this is Chris, CEO of Nuff Said, and today on the Nuff Said podcast, I asked Daniel Rose, what does an end-to-end CCO need to own? The TLDR is that in addition to owning all post-sales functions, the end-to-end CCO also has to own sales engineering and have a seat at deal desk, which allows CS to control time to value, quality of use case, and ultimately net retention rate. So that's the TLDR. Let's dive in.
I'm Daniel Rose. I have had the honor of having the word customer in my job title for greater than 20 years, whether it be customer support engineer, customer success friend, customer success ninja, VP of customer success at multiple Series A to Series C companies. I've had the pleasure of scaling out professional services, support, and success management along with operations. And I feel very lucky that there is a role that aligns with what I love to do. A little bit about myself. I live on the northernmost tip of Utah. I have six children, which I think generally requires me to be a customer success professional in order to get through the day, considering three of them are teenagers. And a fun fact, I was a professional poker player. I was ranked 23rd in the world playing online for a few years and did try my hand at the World Series of Poker a couple of years in a row. So I don't know the direct connection between poker and CS, but they've certainly made life a whole lot of fun.
There's got to be something there about reading your opponent and knowing what move to make.
Yes, but I do feel like the personal connections and questions that I did ask my poker table mates did not get the same responses I do in CS. I will guarantee every escalation call I ever led with the fact that I have six kids, everyone softened. They became a human being that wanted to connect with me. At the poker table, they just looked at me very funny and asked me to make my bet.
Are you raising or not, Daniel? What are we doing here?
Just go.
So, Daniel, you've spent some time thinking about how the CCO expands their roles and responsibilities. And one of the, kind of this concept that's come up recently is this idea of an end-to-end CCO. So how would you describe what an end-to-end CCO looks like and what are they responsible for?
Absolutely. I've been thinking about this a lot, just in reference to how do you streamline the deal closing process to help ensure the greatest possible, revenue retention and revenue growth. And in my mind, that end-to-end CCO would own sales engineering, professional services, customer success management, customer support, and customer operations. They would own everything except for the commercial discussions to land that initial deal.
And many CCOs own a lot of the post-sales infrastructure, but it's unusual to hear sales engineering. So first of all, how did that come into the picture for you as something that a CCO should own? And why would it be helpful for that function to live in the customer department?
Well, there's, I think, primarily two major reasons. One, it is business critical that you land good deals. And two, you cannot ever ensure revenue or revenue growth without the ability to get customers to production and to value. The person that's generally going to know what customers want to build and if it's a good use case is probably going to fall squarely on the sales engineer's shoulders. They're going to understand that deal. They're going to be able to communicate that with urgency across the organization and speak the same language of the people responsible for bringing that deal to production and value.
There's theoretically some tension that would happen with the head of sales if the sales engineers who are primarily spending their time on new business calls report to a different executive. So how do you resolve that conflict with the head of sales?
Well, I think that sales engineers should not just be bonused potentially on that deal closing, but they should have that partnered plan with customer success of days to value. How long does it take to get that customer to value and to growth? Because as an organization, we're not just cared about what revenue they bring in today. We want to know how much revenue we get for the lifetime with that customer. And unless we can get to value, understand it, and commit to it, we're not getting anywhere.
That's interesting. So people often talk about having a component of sales compensation that's tied to something post-sales. It sounds like maybe the role that's most appropriate for this type of compensation is the solutions or sales engineer. Do you also believe in tying compensation to the retention event, or is it more appropriate to tie it to the onboarding or the time to value event?
I mean, really, time to value. If you are reducing your time to value, I think that your revenue retention or growth is an afterthought. If you can get any customer to tell you that you achieved or overachieved the reason why they bought, it's very rare they don't come back with a much grown and expanded revenue number that's always going to make everybody happy.
So one of your previous companies, Imply, what were the circumstances that allowed you to influence the pre-sales and deal desk processes?
I think, you know, that is one of the real benefits of being employee 12. Being employee 12, you get to see multiple sales teams come in and out of an organization. And being in CS, I got to weather that storm or changes multiple times. And in that, CS became the tribal knowledge holder of what makes a good deal and what makes a good use case and what deals fly and what don't. So I got the ability to A, provide my voice within that deal desk, B, be a gatekeeper for the selling or not selling and professional services, and get to be kind of the bottom line, partnered with both sales executives that I got to work with there that were both fantastic.
And since most people listening to this episode will not have sales engineering reporting to them, what are some of the skills that you would have to learn or develop to be able to manage that team effectively?
I think that there is a true art form in technical selling. Like I don't see a lot of people talking about it online. I think customer success is this incredible culture that we've built. But I have worked with some sales engineers that were some of the best salespeople I've ever met. But they managed to tie together technical and business value in the same sentences in a clear and articulate way. They tend to be the unicorns. They can speak technical, but they can communicate with the best of them. And so these are the people that you need to really lean on. And usually the best way to communicate with them is to speak to them as you would a sales team member, which is why it's really important, and start with the why and leave the technical to them.
What's your opinion on what role the sales engineering team should play in the success team? So as part of renewals or even engaging the customer, do you think that there's a role there? Is it the same team? Is it a different team? How do you think about that?
So I've seen two models. Model A is sales team member, sales engineer, go to a customer, define value, close deal. They peel away and run as fast as they possibly can toward the other end of the world. The CSM and the solution architect and support gather the pieces together, sew it up into a pretty quilt, and try to figure out how to get the customer happy. I've also seen incredibly effective where the sales engineer was an end-to-end technical teammate for the customer, meaning they closed the deal and they implemented the customer. And so they were there without any risk of context switching to empower that customer to the technical win and business value they wanted. In my mind, that's the perfect world. You are not losing any time. You're not losing any context. And generally, you're not losing any of the relationships and trust that came in that sales process.
So I guess the follow-on from that is kind of two questions. One is, what do sales engineers need to be empowered to be able to do live in a conversation with customers? And secondly, how do you create a strong relationship between the AE and the sales engineer so that they're seen as teammates and partners rather than adversaries?
I think in many ways, the relationship and dynamic between an SE and a sales team member is very aligned with what you see between a CSM and their sales counterpart in any healthy organization. Where in a healthy organization, your CSM is the person responsible for achieving business value in the use cases that are sold. In a healthy organization, the sales team member trusts them. They let them go apart the business that they know how to do, and they're going to trust them. They're going to go find new business. And in this case, a sales engineer should be trusted in the same way. They understand what it takes to prove a technical outcome, to get a business value, and they're going to trust the sales team member to work out the commercials and the expectations in that arrangement or that process. And I missed your second question, unless I answered them both at the same time.
Yeah. How do you empower the sales engineering team to make sure that the best possible deals are crossing the finish line?
I think they need to show, be able to show historically what deals are the most effective ones and be able to have a voice letting people know if it's a bad use case or bad terms. Historically, in every organization or company we've ever worked for, there's always those bad deals. They're the deals that live in infamy, whether or not it's that use case was dead to start. We sold those terms so low that don't worry, in 6 months, we'll get back and we'll get them to rip that contract up. And we all know that never happens. And so you need to let that sales engineer have a voice reminding the sales team members that short-term wins do not necessarily mean long-term gain. And we need to let them use their experience to show what that long-term gain mean is. And maybe it's helping everybody, you know, be rewarded on those long-term missions.
Does the sales engineer need, for example, pricing power? So the ability to flag a deal that's getting too much of a discount, or maybe even go as far as giving the sales engineer veto power over a deal where they feel like the use case is not a good fit for the company?
Yes. I think the same way that, and we had this at Imply, the head of pre-sale should have that voice at deal desk in a similar way. And it might not be the individual SE that has that deal desk authority, but there is a team member that rolls up that can speak that voice of that SE, because honestly, they tend to know what's going to be good and what is that short-term grenade that we all want to avoid because it's going to affect our ability to fulfill our long-term company goals.
And do you foresee any risks in giving sales engineering or CS that kind of power in the sales process?
Yeah, I mean, the true risks are the ultimate pain of hyper-growth startups. It can cause your deal to slip in that short term. When you have 3 weeks left and your deal needs to close, those are the times that we make compromises that we live to regret later on. And to be blunt, I have seen this over and over again. We make these compromises and then we end up with a much larger problem later is having to report churn or our gross revenue retention going down below a number that might affect our ability to raise money. And so, I mean, that is the risk, but I think the reward is exponentially higher.
One of the things that salespeople are really good at is kind of painting a vision for how a product can solve a problem for the customer. So salespeople are actually quite creative. They will see a problem and say, oh, actually, it's not like a perfect use case, but we think you can use the product to solve the use case in this way. And there is something to this idea of experimentation, where you try out a use case that maybe isn't part of the core, but it's potentially, you know, potentially a large use case, and potentially the product could solve, with a little bit of hacking, that the product can solve the problem. So what's your thinking about experimenting with new use cases versus sticking to just the core that we know works?
I think it, you know, really depends upon what your pricing model is and what kind of deal you're closing. If you're closing a one-year deal with a customer that only potentially has that one use case and it's a stretch, and you're, say, capped out at a certain amount of dollars of that year, there's tremendous risk. But say it was a use it, pay as you go model, and that was kind of a freemium one-year deal where you're proving it, that's a great place to do it. But if there's other growth. But if you're truly, I mean, in my career, we had one of the largest financial institutions in the country, you know, Fortune 50 company, come in on a use case that everyone knew was terrible. It was doomed to start, but with the idea that we would sell into other groups and we could make that up, you know, and the fact was, is that when push comes to shove and we had to admit that customer that use case was faulty or it wasn't a good one, we did not get the opportunity to sell into those groups and had to report a significant churn that it was hard to walk back from. And so it was, you know, we all knew at that point that we were out of luck and it could have been avoided by having a use case that you knew you could go to production with and then sell additional internally.
Well, there's the churn use case, but there's the other side of this, which is the CS get the opportunity to fire a bad customer when they feel like it's a bad fit.
So I would love to go onto this podcast and tell stories about how I got to fire these customers because they were so terrible to us. I've never seen it. I've always heard people say, don't worry, we have your back. We'll fire them if we need to. But I've only in the last 8 years, it's been Series A to Series C or Series D companies, yet to see a customer fire. So there is a place, I think, that you should easily be able to quantify the cost of ownership and cost of revenue in these trouble accounts and make a really comfortable decision. But I think it's easier said than done.
Okay. So it's potentially is on your list of authority and responsibility, but it's never actually going to get used.
Absolutely. I have seen 25 discussions in humor and all seriousness and yet to see that exercise. I do believe that time and time again, companies will spend significant time on a customer in the attempt to keep them, where they could have landed 4 or 5 customers or expanded 4 to 5 customers with the same amount of time. The risk is heavy when you make those decisions.
And who gets to be the gatekeeper of ProServe and how that's provided as part of the initial deal? Is that something that the sales team does, or maybe someone, a representative from ProServe, or is this the sales engineer?
It should go through the deal desk. It should be the CCO and the CRO at the bottom line. If it's a technical product, no deal should ever get closed without PS. I don't care if that PS is written off at an 80% discount. It needs to have a dollar value attached to make sure that customer has skin in the game. You know, it's all about getting customers to that value event. If you have a technical product, and you don't have your experts implementing it, your risk is right there, is your inability to get to value. But I will say, I do think that the CS leaders I've worked with tend to not invest enough time teaching and coaching their sales team how to sell services and getting themselves a seat at the table with the customer during the POC or even before selling the value of services. It tends to get thrown at the customer in the final hour. And at the final hour, it loses.
And that's it for this week's episode of Nuff Said. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, head over to your podcast platform of choice and make sure you're subscribed. And tune in next week for more real customer success strategies. Nuff said.